Welcome to the Month 2 Investable ETR briefing that covers the trading period from the 1st of February to the 28th of February 2023. We will be continuing with this new style of briefing as of last month. I hope you all found it interesting as we look closer at what is happening within Credit Exchange. Firstly, we will look at a recent trade of ours involving the purchase of a vessel. Next, we will show you some of the work that goes on at our deal desk and some of the potential projects that team are looking at. And there will also be our monthly segments on the Seaborne reports and the state of the European and global economies. And to finish off, we will look at the briefing itself and any news from Investable. So now, for our first topic, I will hand you off to Andrew.
Thanks for that, Ruby. So as Ruby mentioned, we will begin today with our first topic that is looking at one of our recent ATR or asset finance trades for a new originator. This originator is a marine services and logistics provider for some of the major oil companies in Nigeria. In the past, they chartered vessels to prestigious companies like Shell and Exxon. It's good to know that the introduction to this new originator came from one of our existing originators. In fact, the new customer had previously chartered a credit vessel for over 12 months and was therefore under an assignment of proceeds or mandated to pay their monthly charter party fees to Credet. A conversation ensued and the introduction was made to the deal desk. From there, Patrick and the deal desk expanded on this introduction and submitted the application to Trade Desk, who were delighted to be able to approve the purchase and lease back of this vessel. This trade was for the purchase and lease back of an oil servicing vessel in West Africa, and she is currently based off the coast of Abidjan in Ivory Coast. The value of the trade was for 3 million euro, which converted to circa $3.2 million and is leased for over 30 months. This was the single largest trade for the month of February 2023. And one of the key components of this trade was that our originator already had a charter party agreement or contract in place for the next 18 months with First Exploration and Petroleum Development Company, or First EMP for short. Coincidentally, First EMP were already chartering another vessel owned by Credet and were already under an assignment of proceeds, so they were already paying Credet for an unrelated vessel. The total contract value is for $6 million, while the daily charter hire for our vessel is $9,000. As well as being our largest trade for the month, you will also see that First EMP are present on our list of top 10 largest holdings for M02. And it's nice to see that the first payment from First EMP on the foot of this assignment actually reached us last week. There has also been $700,000 worth of contracts traded on First EMP from their first originator. And as payments now start to arrive from the second originator trading First EMP, the value of their ETR holdings is only going to increase. At last month's briefing, I explained how we mandate payment terms of before break bulk with all our individual charter hires, meaning credit are settled before discharge of the cargo. With sale and leaseback transactions, though, as the vessel has been chartered for 18 months and not one single time charter trip, the payment terms are going to differ. There is no individual loading or discharging that we need to monitor, or are we awaiting a payment before discharging is allowed to occur. But the security and control are still the same. We still mandate that all income related to the hire flows through the credit bank accounts. We then, as explained in prior briefings, will deduct our monthly lease repayment, and then only once we are settled will we release the surplus of our funds to our originator, which is usually within 24 hours. Let's remember, though, that this vessel belongs to Credet. And if the charter party fails to make payment, we can issue an order that will prevent the vessel leaving its next port of dock. This then creates an extra layer of protection for the ETR and in turn is protecting your investors' cash. With all these vessels, you might wonder how we manage to keep track of them all. We currently subscribe to a service known as PurpleTrack, which allows Trade Desk to monitor exactly where our vessels are in the world. The routes they're on, the port of departure, the destination port, the speed they're traveling at, and even things like a notification if she's passing through waters from one country to the next. Think of it as like one of the many taxi apps we all have on our phones. When your car is en route, you can track it. When it arrives, you get a notification and you can see exactly where the car is on your screen. This is no different. This all helps us providing real-time information on our vessels so we can keep track of them and make sure they are where they are meant to be. Probably unlike your taxi though. So keeping with our new format of trying to showcase more of what we do with your investors' cash and the transactions we are looking at, we have a new section today in the briefing which will feature a look at a few of the potential trades that the Deal Desk is working on. For anyone who doesn't know what the Deal Desk is, this is the team that Patrick manages who work on the initial trade and ironing out the details so we can reach an agreement with any potential new originator. And for this section, as it is Patrick who looks after this team, I'm going to hand you over to him to fill you all in.
Thanks, Andrew, and hi, everyone. So, and as Andrew has said, from this month onwards, we're going to let you in and see some of the potential deals that the Deal Desk is working on that's made up of five people, of which I am one. And we've got various things going on. For example, we're examining a transaction at the moment to do with exporting coconuts from India, which, much to my surprise, is one of the world's largest producers of coconuts, believe it or not. But exporting coconuts from India to Dubai, or another one where we're looking at feedstock from North Africa and Asia to customers based in Belgium, the Netherlands, UK, so basically the EU. So this feedstock is then turned into sustainable aviation fuel and biodiesel. But the one I'm going to tell you about today is a potential trade finance deal where we're dealing with a Spanish company who's looking to buy sugar from Costa Rica and Brazil and sell it to customers basically all over the globe in places like Germany, the Gulf, China, and so on. This particular trade is for has a potential value of $8 million on a recurring basis. The company in question has been trading for more than 14 years and has a turnover of about $30 million per annum. Brazil, as you may well know, is the largest producer of sugar globally, but they're currently faced with a pretty unique issue. Global demand for sugar is increasing all the time, and Brazil can't export all of the commodity quick enough, as they're also diverting sugar pulp into producing ethanol. So you've got a rising demand for sugar driven by not only consumption in food stuffs and such like, but also for putting it into bio-friendly or ESG-friendly fuels as the ever-increasing energy prices make this more attractive. So because energy has become more valuable, more sugar cane has actually been diverted away from the food chain into ethanol production. And also there's bottlenecks within the production itself that's now affecting places like Brazil, and therefore lowering the export availability of sugar. So long story short, the price of sugar is continuing to rise. So that particular transaction, as I said, is one that we're looking at. And from what Andrew tells me, the price of sugar reached a 10-year high 2 months ago in January, and they expect it to stay at that level for the foreseeable future. So how this deal will be financed will be through letters of credit that is part of our new documentary credit product line. So the LC will be issued by a bank that the trade desk will approve. So you've got various banks in places like South America, Asia, etc., where the credit rating of the bank might not just be as exactly what we want. So we will say, yes, it's okay, the LC is issued by that bank, but we want it confirmed either by a bank in the US or by a bank in the EU. And therefore, that hardens up its credit rating. The example I can give you from November, I think it was, it was coming out of the Agricultural Bank of China, which is a perfectly good bank, but we wanted the transaction confirmed in Europe, and we managed to get AIB to confirm that. So a similar thing, if we're anyway concerned about the quality of the bank issuing the LC, we'll have it confirmed by one in the EU or the US. So once the, in this case, the sugar trader who's buying the sugar, once they decide, right, I'm going to sell it to these guys in Germany, the letter of credit, the bank that will issue the letter of credit will be presented to the trade desk, and they'll say, yes, we like Deutsche Bank, or no, we don't like ABC Bank. In this particular case, the LC will come from a reputable bank, and trade desk will approve it. And as you will probably know, once a bank issues a letter of credit, it's a payment guarantee, and it removes all the trade issues that you have between the buyer and the seller, and it becomes a bank-to-bank transaction. So the issuing bank that issues the LC settles the LC to the advising bank, and it's done purely based on the strength of the documents, which brings in the function of the trade desk again, because the trade desk manages the production of those documents, the wording of those documents, and makes sure that those documents match the wording that they would have agreed to in the issuing of the letter of credit in the first place. So once the documents are presented by the seller to the bank, the payment gets settled. And as I mentioned, depending where that bank is based, it may need to be confirmed by an EU bank. All of the funds of that LC will be assigned to us. They'll be received by the credit bank account. And basically, letters of credit are a secure form of finance and a financial instrument that we're looking to do more and more of based on our experience over the last 3-4 years. So that's a quick look at some of the things that we are doing on the trade desk and how what we do is then passed. Sorry, what we do on the deal desk and what we do is then passed to the trade desk. So I'll pass it back now to Andrew to talk to you about the next part of the briefing.
Thanks, Patrick. And it's great to hear more about what you and the deal desk are working on. Those deals they're working on every day are the initial proceedings for an originator to receive funds that come from the investable investments that are coming from your investors. So it is interesting to get an idea from both sides as you intermediaries work with your clients to provide the funds for the deal desk dealings. As with many of the deals we look at, though, they can be very relevant to what's going on in the world. The sugar deal Patrick discussed is no different. In this month's set of Seaborne reports, there is an article about how the Biden administration are to move on the Midwest ethanol blended gasoline this month. It is expected that they'll actually recommend for approval of this, and then that will actually allow expanded sales of petrol with a higher ethanol blend. So petrol with higher levels of ethanol reduce their emissions and are actually deemed to be greener. Ireland actually only recently announced that the ethanol level in petrol here will increase from 5% to 10%. So then sticking with this kind of renewable energy theme, Seaborne then also actually talked about how China is increasing their renewable energy supply by turning to wind power. So China has been the world's largest and fastest growing producer of renewable energy for more than a decade. But in recent times, it's actually widened its lead over its international rivals through a steep acceleration in the rollout of its wind capacity since 2021. China added more wind generation capacity in the past 2 years than they actually did over the previous seven. And in 2022, they generated 46% more wind power than all of Europe combined. While they are actually growing their thirst for renewable energy, Seaborne are also reporting that OPEC believe China's oil demand will grow between 500,000 to 600,000 barrels per day in 2023 as the world's top crude oil importer emerges from its own COVID-19 restrictions. With China opening, we are quite optimistic, but cautiously, according to OPEC Secretary General Hatem El Gais. This increased demand then from China will actually also have a knock-on effect for Europe's fuel supplies. Seaborne further reports how the chief executive of Norwegian energy giant Equinor, who became Europe's top natural gas supplier last year after exports from Russia were mostly choked off following Moscow's invasion of Ukraine, believes Europe's gas supplies will stay tight for at least two more winters. He believes that Europe will struggle over the next two winters to replace the Russian natural gas, but as China's appetite for the fuel recovers. It is predicted, though, that China's reopening will benefit the world, but it looks as if it could actually come at a cost also. To finish off this section then, Seaborne Report once again holds steady their figures from previous about the changes to the global fleet, with both the Handymax and Panamax set to lose 15% of their fleet in the next 5 years and their future order book not sufficient to replace this loss. If we then look to the Baltic Index, it seems its fortunes have actually started to turn after a very positive February. It began the month continuing to fall, sinking as low as 518 mid-month. It then rallied towards the end of the month and ended on 1,104. It has actually continued this trend so far and is currently sat at 1,456 as of today. This positive outlook and recent strong recovery from the Baltic Index can also be seen in the current spot prices for our vessels, which have more than doubled since last month's briefing and are now at $13,250, with the FFA markets also showing even higher prices of $15,900 for Q2 and $16,250 for Q3. These higher prices mean our ship owners can charge more per day for the use of the ship, meaning more shipping ETR income that is coming into the credit bank account. This recovery then in the spot and future markets for shipping isn't actually seen across the world or in different markets. When speaking the last couple of months on the economic outlook in Europe and closer to home, it has been actually quite positive, with inflation starting to come down. But since our last briefing, figures for February have been released that provided some shocks to the market. Inflation rose once again to 8.5% in February. The Minister for Finance, Michael McGrath, has said the estimated increase in inflation last month is somewhat unexpected, but it is only a data from 1 month. It doesn't change our overall assessment that particularly from quarter two of this year, we expect to see a pretty rapid fall in inflation across the year, and it's hoping it's still coming to between 4-5%, and that remains our expectation. Ireland wasn't the only Eurozone country to record a surprise increase in inflation last month, though. Both France and Spain reported an increase in inflation in February. Though an increase in these countries did not stop, but only slow down the Eurozone's overall figure, as the Euro area inflation was 8.5% in February 2023, down from 8.6% in January 2023. And while these high levels of inflation remain, the ECB remained committed to keeping interest rates and keep increasing interest rates as a tool to lower inflation. They once again rose interest rates by another 50 basis points, with their main lending rate now at 3.5%, and they are showing no signs of stopping, with my prediction from the last briefing of rates to hit 4% by the end of the year looking extremely likely. The latest increase was actually met with some opposition and calls by investors to dial back policy tightening and to take account of the current situation in the financial markets. The sudden collapse of Silicon Valley Bank shocked the system after there was attempted withdrawals of over $42 billion in 1 day alone. These worries about the financial system then spread across the Atlantic as Credit Suisse's shares began to plunge. This then led to a mega merger between Credit Suisse and their Swiss competitors, UBS. Credit Suisse stock will be converted into UBS shares at only a ratio of 22.48-1 once the deal is finalized. This mega merger represents a new global dimension in the banking turmoil set off by the Silicon Valley Bank's collapse. Even though many of Credit Suisse's problems were unique and unlike the weaknesses that brought down SVB, this takeover has calmed the market slightly, but fears of further banks collapsing are still prevalent. First Republic are currently in discussions with JP Morgan on how to stabilize their operations, as they have a high number of uninsured deposits, which was a trait that was shared with SVB. But their shares continue to slide and closing on Monday of this week, 47% down. These unexpected shocks have been seen right across the globe over the last month, with the UK no different. On Wednesday, it was announced that UK inflation unexpectedly accelerated in February and rose to 10.4%. This was up from 10.1% in January and then higher than the 9.9% forecasted by the Bank of England. This has created increased belief that the Bank of England will continue with their interest rate rise. Financial markets have actually priced in a 62% probability that the Bank of England will raise rates by 25 basis points. Though some economies actually do seem to have been lucky, China's inflation rate fell to the lowest it has been in a year. This is believed directly related to their reopening. Only last week, it was announced that after 3 years of closures during the COVID-19 pandemic, China is finally reopening its borders to visitors. A lot of hopes are placed on China getting involved once again in primary global economic activity, as many feel this will help others avoid deep recessions. With credit in a strong position, these situations where others are distressed could lead to further opportunities for growth of the company and to create further relationships and revenue streams. If an opportunity arises, credit will be sure to act. Our last section then this evening is to discuss the briefing itself. You will still see the figures showing the active RSA of 102.21 million euro, with 70.55 million euro fully allocated in the first section. Our list of the top 10 largest holdings and top 10 rated are presented in our newly designed graphs, while regular appearances from the likes of the HSE, Balfour Beatty and Skanska Constein, while our donut graphs are showing a well-diversified spread of investments. If we look to the performance sector, we see the 2022 M02 versus 2023 M02 was up 66.12% at 17.42 million euro in February of this year, compared to 10.52 million euro in February 2022. Volumes continue to remain down by 11.47% as the value to volume ratio increases in line with higher value and quality traded ETR. Investor redemptions increased significantly to 4.6 million euro. Hopefully this is just an anomaly, and looking at the figures, I can see they are already reduced from March so far. Our trend section charts the interest rate for the month, but as you should have all seen by now, we increased the interest rate on all three of our investable options 2 weeks ago. As maintained in prior briefings, if change happened in the market, we would act. And as rates continue to rise, so do ours. The changes are demand increased to 3.5%, fixed is increased to 4%, and term is increased to 14.94% at the end of the three-year term. This represents a 1% base rate increase on all three products. This term offering is also the highest rate ever on offer by Investable. I hope this will increase demand for Investable with yourselves and allow both you and your investors to benefit. And as before, the briefing document ends with a repeat of the RSA figure of 102.21 million euro. And that concludes this month's briefing for February 2023. So thank you very much.
Very good. Thanks, Andrew. That point about China and the offshore demand, that's going to harden the prices on the offshore vessels that we own, and also explains why they've basically doubled in value in the last 6 months. Yeah, good one. Sorry, Thomas.
Yeah, no, just Patrick, how many vessels do Credit actually have?
At the moment, 12.
Oh, 12, right. Hmm. Now, what would be the overall exposure, I suppose, to them in relation to the ETRs and, I suppose, maybe value?
Well, the value, the average, when you average out the value, last time I saw it, it was 53% loan to value. So in other words, we, at the price that we, on the day that we bought them, we paid on average 53% of their value. But as I've just said a moment ago, most of those vessels have doubled in value. So if we were to sell them today, we're certainly on the right side of it. Regarding the percentage asset-wise, we basically only hold two types of asset. It's either a trade asset or it's a, what do you call it? It's a trade asset or it's a physical asset, for example, a ship. So the split is roughly 50-50. Asset versus trade, I'm talking on the balance sheet side. But on the income side, it's still 90% of our income is coming from trade. The assets are obviously being paid on a monthly basis. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, yeah. It was just showing that the shipping part of it is becoming, you know, it has over last year or even longer become bigger and bigger in relation to the.
Well, it hasn't. So, yeah, well, as you may know, we've switched auditors last year. So Deloitte did our audit in 2021. KPMG are doing our audit for 2022. But when you look at the assets, 221 versus 222, they're pretty much the same because we sold three and bought one. So they're pretty stable assets versus trade. And the income is pretty consistent too.
All right. Okay.
Any other questions from anyone?
Sorry, Patrick. Patsy here. Can you hear me?
Hi, Patsy. Yeah.
How you doing?
Good.
Patrick, just go back to the oil servicing vessel, right?
Yes.
€3 million or $3.2 million, right?
Yes.
And just, you know, when you say the contract, you have a lease, you have that lease, is it for 30 months? Did you say? Or
36 18? Months, at a guess.
It's a 30-month lease.
30-month lease.
Yeah.
So, so that particular vessel is in a contract for 18 months.
Right.
And our lease on it is for 30 months.
Right, okay. So,
at the end of its contract, it's going to need another contract, obviously.
Yes, you're 12, you know, you have a 12 months, or sorry, 18, yeah, to fill. And typically, you had an outlay of $3 million, right? There. What's the lease? What is it? What's the revenue on that?
Let me get the specific. I can get the specific numbers in front of me. Actually, I'm not going to do that because it'll hold everybody up.
Yeah.
The value of the, so the $3 million that we're out, the contract that we have against that is worth $6 million. Now, obviously, the company needs to run itself. So we have a lease on an asset at roughly, say, 50%, where the income that's coming in against that $3 million, it's twice its value. That same company will come out of that lease. So not come out of that lease, come out of that particular charter party agreement and will enter another. Most of those contracts are written on a 1+1+1 basis. So rather than the vessel owner locking himself in at a price for 3 years, they elect to break the contract every year and renegotiate a new price in this market because they know the prices are rising and they don't want to be locked in 3 years' time at a rate that's half what the market's paying. So there's no concerns about that company actually maintaining that vessel for its full 30 months and beyond at its current price, if not higher.
Mm. Right. So in 30 months' time, is that deal finished?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that company will ask us to buy another one. So we take a view, the vessel itself is a means to an end for us. So as opposed to us looking at it as an asset that we're getting lease repayments on, we're looking at the asset more as being a revenue generating vehicle or revenue generating vessel, funny enough. And that's bringing in many times per month, many times more than what it is that they owe us on a monthly basis. And that strong throughput of cash means that at any moment in time, if we get concerned, we go, hang on a second, you've missed a payment, which has never happened to us to date, or we don't like the change in the market, or what happened to that contract, or we noticed that you were in the wrong place, like Andrew was talking about earlier on. So we're very close to what's going on without physically being on board.
Mm-hmm.